This episode is brought to you by the Cambie Liquor Store. With their ever-growing selection of spirits, beers, and local wines, as well as some awesome gifts that you can't find anywhere else, there's so much more than your average liquor store. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center.
This episode is also brought to you by Oddmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to the Cambie Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Many a young person seeking counsel have received the sage advice, don't play with fire. Perhaps, in Cambie, a seasoned elected official might advise a younger one to avoid playing with, quote-unquote, the fireworks issue. Specifically, the aerial fireworks displays used to celebrate touchdowns at Cambie High School home football games, a much-beloved community tradition that goes back decades, but that has become increasingly criticized by neighboring residents. 2 years ago, the council held public hearings on the fireworks issue at the request of local resident Paul Yilvasakar and other neighbors, but things did not go the way they'd hoped. Rather than restrict the Cambie School District's aerial displays, they granted them an exemption in the existing noise ordinance, meaning they can use fireworks and other explosive devices at football games with impunity, and without requesting a variance in public hearing, as is required by most other events and organizers in town. But if elected officials had hoped that codifying the fireworks displays into the noise ordinance would be the end of the matter, it certainly was not. Despite a down year in 2018, in which the Cougs scored only 3 or 4 times at home, Mr. Yilvasakar was back at City Council before the following season to ask again that the practice be ended. This time, he brought a petition signed by approximately 50 neighboring residents, including 2 local veterinary clinics and an assisted living facility. A sympathetic city administrator reached out to request that the district celebrate the football team in some other way. And, well, I think we all remember what happened next. Mr. Yilvasakar, who suffers from PTSD and chronic pain issues that the random explosions exacerbate, has become practically as common a sight at city council meetings as the mayor himself. And he vows that he's not going away. He says the issue is about fairness, livability, and equity towards all citizens. A pastor's son, who became a general contractor but admitted he still has a bit of the preacher in him, Yilvasakar tried to explain on Wednesday the impact the fireworks have on him when they're set off practically in his backyard.
The beginning of a game, I'm willing to tolerate that so Cambie gets its fix. I am not willing to tolerate the random explosions that makes my heart beat, puts my blood pressure up, and causes my pain levels to go up. I'm tired of that. I am also tired of having my favorite cat in my lap bolt and go under the bed, and then maybe come out, and then, oh, another touchdown. Or when I'm in bed, because, excuse me, I need to lower my voice. Boop. Okay. When I'm in bed trying to sleep, and then the Cambie team finally gets a win, and I'm happy for them. And it wakes me up, because I rise early. That's not fair to me, and I'm tired of that. Again, blood pressure goes up, heart rate goes up, pain level goes up, sleep is gone because of the celebration.
His wife, Brenda Yilvasakar, also speaking last week, said she understands the importance of tradition, but she also understands that sometimes traditions have to change. She spoke of another athletic tradition at her alma mater, Washington State University, which she saw end after being celebrated for over 50 years.
And we had a tradition of locking up a real cougar on campus. And I like to say that I had something to do with that tradition ending, and it needed to end. I like cougars, but I prefer cougars in the wild. I like fireworks, but I prefer them not to be random and explosive and harmful, especially to my family members and to my pets as well, and to my neighbor's pets and to my neighbor's children.
Since last year, the Yolva Sockers have maintained that they're not against the school district or its football team. They say they want the Cougars to win and want them to be celebrated, just, you know, in a different way, one that has less of an impact on their neighborhood. Brenda Yolva Socker said she would support, even financially, involving the high school community to envision and realize a new, unique Canby tradition. She even made a suggestion that we admit sounds pretty cool.
And just imagine a screen bigger than this with a cougar on it, that instead of fireworks, it's a cougar roaring in celebration of the opening or the start of the game, of the touchdowns, of the win. You know, what would be so wrong with that? I mean, that's just one example. If we try to invest the students in a new tradition, looking at a new tradition, let's uncage the cougar. And let's free, you know, the minds of these young students to envision something different. What would be so wrong with that?
The discussion by counselors that followed was not about ending the fireworks practice, but merely undoing the 2-year exemption in the city noise ordinance. This would require district officials to seek a noise variance each year. Some, like Council President Tim Dale, asked what the point of that would be, when all councilors have said they support the fireworks and would probably vote to approve a variance if presented with one. After all, the Yolva Sockers are asking for the practice to be ended, not for the chance to appear before the council and be shot down on an annual basis. But as Councilor Sarah Spoon explained, to her, it's about the chance to be heard, and for the community to continue to have conversation around a topic that is so important to so many.
Right now, do I think that the fireworks are going to change? No, I think that they'll apply for the variance, and I think the majority of council would allow the variance. Do I think that will happen every year? I don't know. I think it depends on what the citizen engagement is, right? But I don't think that it's good governance to shut citizen engagement down because it's easier, right? I think that we should make government as accessible to citizens as possible. We should have as much conversation as possible.
No vote was taken on the matter last week, but the idea of reopening the noise ordinance and removing the exemption for fireworks at high school football games will be brought back for consideration at a future council meeting. Trigger warning for our listeners. This story contains references to hate crimes, sexual harassment, rape, bullying, homicide, and attempted suicide. Canby Mayor Brian Hodson on Wednesday night announced his decision to deny a requested proclamation for International Transgender Day of Visibility for the second year in a row. The request was for a local observance of the annual event dedicated to celebrating transgender people and raising awareness of the discrimination they face. Members of the Canby Transgender Alliance and other supporters have pleaded for the proclamation, saying it would help marginalized LGBTQ residents and youth feel safer and more accepted in their community. Others, like Marine veteran Jordan Tibbles, who spoke at the Canby City Council meeting this week before Mayor Hodson announced his decision, don't see how denying the proclamation equates to harming or rejecting trans people, or anyone else for that matter.
As a Christian, I am called to love my neighbor as myself. I am not called to judge others. I believe we will all stand before the Lord one day and account for how we spent our time on this earth. I recognize not everyone in our community shares my beliefs, and I respect their right to believe what they feel is right. As a veteran of the Marine Corps, that is one of the many reasons I served this great country. but I would also expect the same respect to be reciprocated to people of faith. Instead, what I see is a visceral attack on individuals for having a biblical worldview and standing firm that the Word of God is above any cultural norms we've adopted as a society.
If the objective of the proclamation is unity and equality, I believe it achieves the opposite in tribalism and division, Tibble said. We should be highlighting what brings us together and not what separates us, he concluded. If a proclamation must be made, Tibbles concluded, let it be for a Cambie Unity Day, where all citizens of Cambie are celebrated. Mayor Hodson began his remarks by apologizing and taking full responsibility for his delay in addressing the matter. Not only the more recent request, but last year's as well, in which he had privately denied the proclamation but never fully or publicly explained his reasons for doing so.
I will not be reading or making a proclamation for the Transgender Day of Visibility this year. When we look at our list of proclamations for the past almost 20 years, they do not put one group or type above another. Not man over woman, not one gender over another, or one faith over another. This is not a religious decision, has been said the last couple of meetings. I'm not gonna start doing this now. By singling out or putting others above oneself, we all lose.
Mayor Hodson said he's glad the Cambie Transgender Alliance is getting involved in the community and encouraged them to recognize and celebrate the Transgender Day of Visibility in their own way, even offering the use of city parks and other facilities open to the public. Much of the community's discussion around this topic has concerned the issue of safety. Trans advocates and trans individuals themselves have described harassment, bullying in schools, and even violence against the LGBT community right here in Cambie. Safety and security is also important to the mayor. And during this discussion last year, he pointed to the city's Statement for a Safe Community, which, quote, condemns the use of statements, symbols, actions, or activities that would convey messages of hatred or in any way seek to deprive any person of their fundamental rights, end quote. This week, he said that he met with Police Chief Brett Smith and Superintendent Trip Goodall to discuss the reported incidents concerning trans youth and families. Both officials told him that they had no reports of harassment or violence against transgender residents or students over the past 10 years. Several members of the CTA responded to those numbers, saying many instances of harassment and violence against trans people go unreported for a variety of reasons. They may fear or mistrust law enforcement, or the process of investigating or revisiting the crime may be as traumatic as the crime itself, which is also one reason sexual assaults and rapes are believed to be vastly unreported. Cambie resident Amira Stanley expressed her frustration with the mayor leaning on these statistics, seemingly over the firsthand experiences she and other members of the CTA have offered.
Part of my struggle with you has been, and again, I will say again on record, I genuinely think you're a nice guy. And when I shake your hand and smile, it is genuine. But this is the type of thing that is frustrating when you're being asked direct questions or you're pulling up all these facts when you have all of, you have me, you and I have been nothing but respectful to you.
Absolutely.
You have all of us to tell you what's been going on and you pull these kind of facts like you did something amazing and I'm disappointed in that. And even last time I was here, I was joking with them saying, and I know you and I are pretty close to the same age, I felt like my mom. I was very disappointed last time.
After the meeting, the CTA announced Leading with Love, a public event on March 18th at Waite Park to celebrate the contributions and accomplishments of the transgender community. After the park event, the group will walk to the city council meeting that night at the Cambie Civic Center in an effort to continue to show their support for the LGBT community and the Trans Day of Visibility. Concerns about the threat posed by the novel coronavirus, or COVID-19, continue to spread somewhat more rapidly than the virus itself this past week. Oregonians were rocked Sunday by the news that Governor Kate Brown had declared a state of emergency to address the spread of COVID-19, after announcing that the Oregon Health Authority had identified 7 new cases, bringing Oregon's total to 14. That's 14 cases in a state of 4.2 million. 14 is probably less than the number of Oregonians who will claim to have been abducted by aliens this week. But sure, let's all freak out about coronavirus instead of the real threat, aliens. Anyway, the emergency declaration gives the Oregon Health Authority and the Office of Emergency Management access to state's full resources to stem the spread of the disease. Governor Brown authorized the state of emergency by verbal proclamation Saturday night, which we really hope means she came into the room and yelled, "I declare a state of emergency," a la Michael Scott in The Office. She confirmed the executive order in writing Sunday morning. Quote, "This news is concerning for all Oregonians, but my resolve and that of my administration to address this public health crisis is unchanged," Governor Brown said in a press release. She continued, "We will do everything it takes within our power and in coordination with federal and local officials to keep Oregonians safe," end quote. The emergency declaration also allows OHA to activate reserves of emergency volunteer healthcare professionals, bringing online auxiliary medical professionals to work with local health authorities to identify and contain new cases of COVID-19 in Oregon. The declaration additionally grants broad authority to the State Public Health Director, OHA, and the Office of Emergency Management, which will allow the agencies to take immediate action and devote all available state resources towards containing the coronavirus in Oregon. The state of emergency will remain in effect for 60 days, but can be extended until the public health threat of the coronavirus is contained. Calling it a precautionary measure, the Board of Commissioners declared a state of emergency last week in Clackamas County, where the state's first case of coronavirus was confirmed. The number of confirmed cases crept over 100,000 this weekend, with a death toll of close to 4,000. 21 deaths have been reported in the United States, 18 of them in neighboring Washington. Of those 18, all but 2 were residents of the same nursing home. No deaths have yet been reported in Oregon. Coronavirus is most dangerous for seniors and those with underlying medical conditions. The vast majority of cases are mild. The virus is thought to be spread from person to person when in close contact. Officials recommend frequent hand washing with soap and water or an alcohol-based sanitizer. They also recommend maintaining at least 3 feet of distance from anyone who is coughing or sneezing. Well, it's over. A tumultuous short session for the Oregon legislature came to an abrupt end Thursday afternoon after lawmakers failed to come to an agreement that would end the Republican walkout and restore quorum. The constitutionally mandated final day would have been Sunday, March 8th. In one of, no doubt, many statements to come, House Republican leader Christine Drazen, the state representative for Canby, said she was shocked by the decision by House Speaker Tina Kotek to end the session prematurely. Drazen said, quote, "We still had time to pass necessary funding items to address the needs of Oregonians across the state. But Democratic leaders chose to sacrifice these budget bills and shared priorities in the name of their no-compromise approach to cap and trade. The supermajority set the agenda for the session. They inexplicably refused to allow Oregonians to vote on cap and trade, and they own this failed outcome," end quote. Republican leaders in both chambers had offered to return on the session's final day to pass emergency budget bills and other critical funding priorities addressing the state's housing and homelessness crisis, fragmented behavioral health system, looming wildfire season, and other targeted investments. But Speaker Kotek said she was not interested in welcoming the absentee Republicans back for a one-day floor session, where they would, quote, "get to cherry-pick which bills live and die," end quote. Speaker Kotek's unwillingness to work towards a bipartisan resolution on Sunday proves the lack of good faith effort on her part and further proves the session was rigged from the start, Representative Drazen said. Democrats choose to punish their political opponents over serving the needs of Oregonians, end quote. On the flip side, House Majority Leader Barbara Smith Warner from Portland lauded House Speaker Kotek, Senate President Peter Courtney, and Governor Kate Brown for their leadership throughout the session, including the 11-day walkout by the Republican caucus that began last week. She said that, quote, by walking out of the legislative session 11 days ago, Republicans created this mess. They have misled, they have negotiated in bad faith, and they have left their constituents hanging in the wind. Their continued obstruction has left us out of time to address not only climate change legislation, but funding for wildfires, rural school districts, and so much more, end quote. Governor Brown lashed Republican lawmakers over their latest walkout, saying it has, quote, badly damaged Oregon's legislative branch. That's not how Democratic representation works, she said. First, it is all about education funding, then about climate change. Every time they don't like something, they just get up and leave. That's not compromise. It's holding Oregonians hostage to ultimatums and political posturing, end quote. Governor Brown said she would be open to calling a special session to pass critical budget bills and funding measures for wildfires, foster care, flood relief for Pendleton, and other state programs, but only if, quote, legislative leaders bring me a plan for a functioning session, end quote. She also signaled her own plans to take executive action on climate change, a move House Majority Leader Smith Warner said she understands and supports. I have always been clear that a legislative solution was my preferred path to tackle the impacts of climate change for the resources it would bring to our rural communities and the flexibility it would provide for our businesses. The governor said, however, I will not back down. In the coming days, I will be taking executive action to lower our greenhouse gas emissions. Camby Now Sports is brought to you by Reif & Hunziker, PC. When you need an attorney, terms of the firm Camby is trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. The 2020 legislative session isn't the only thing that's over. The seasons ended for both the boys and girls basketball teams this past week, as their postseason runs came to a close. The Camby girls kicked things off Tuesday night at home against number 20 ranked Jesuit, and the Cougars took care of business, dispatching the Crusaders 43-36 to stave off a first round upset. The win set up a showdown with one of the best teams in the state, the four-seeded Liberty High School. And though our ladies battled hard, pulling as close as within six with 2.5 minutes to go, the Cougs ultimately fell 42-52. The boys were in a much tougher Three Rivers League this year. Without key starter Big Ben Bailey for much of the season, wound up with lower seeding and ranked 28th overall. They also played 5th-ranked Central Catholic in the first round of the playoffs. They kept things close, also drawing within 6 late in the fourth quarter, before the Rams pulled away to win 68-49. The girls will graduate standout senior Nicole Mickelson, who was selected to the Three Rivers League Girls Basketball All-League First Team. But they'll bring back league second teamer Zoe Thompson, who is a junior this year. The boys, on the other hand, will return much of their core next year, including first team All Three Rivers League junior Diego Arredondo and honorable mention sophomore Alex Evans. One of the last winter sports to wrap up is the Camby dance team, who is gunning for their incredible 6th straight state title in a couple weeks. They added the latest hardware to their crowded trophy case this past weekend, as they performed at Liberty High School in their last local competition before the state championships. They took home first place in the show division, because of course they did, and also received the Grand Championship Award for highest scores of the day across all teams and divisions. Said head coach Jen Chafee, "We laughed, we cried, we drank Jamba, ate Brett's mom's cookies, we braided, danced our hearts out, and left it all out on the floor. Tomorrow, it's back to the gym to keep working. less than 2 weeks until the state championships.
The Cambie Now podcast is brought to you in part by Direct Link, where technology meets tradition. Cambie's longest-running and most innovative communications provider for over 116 years, DirectLink has worked hard to bring quality services to the area at affordable prices. From establishing phone lines in the early 1900s to being the first gigabit internet speed provider in Oregon, DirectLink paves the way for new technology so our neighbors can stay connected. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to Cambie Now Plus member Richard Hands. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit cambienowpod.com/plus.
Thank you for listening to the Cambie Now podcast.
Well, joining us once again on the Cambie Now podcast is local musician Ray Hardiman. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Get on the mic, Ray. Come on, man. I thought you were familiar with this process.
I am. I was walking away. I want to get that studio fade going on.
Yeah, that was nice. That was a very good process there. Practical effects, they call that, doing a fade just by moving the phone farther away from the microphone.
That's it.
Love that. So, Ray, you've been on the show before with your wife, Rebecca. You guys do a local jazz show at Langdon Farms, done that for quite a few years, and more recently have started doing quite a few events here in Cambie with your, well, with some of the jazz and also with your Carpenters tribute.
Right.
Rebecca was initially supposed to be on the show today, once again, to promote the Carpenters tribute.
Right,
you guys do at the Pioneer Chapel.
In March, yep.
Yeah, this is the second time that we've tried to do it. And for the second time, by the time we had it all scheduled and ready to go, you guys were sold out. So
so we'll move on to the next production here.
Right, it's a good problem to have, though.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of... The Carpenters are very well known, so
yeah, obviously, and seem to be really popular here in Cambie.
Yeah,
yeah. You guys are getting a lot of bookings and stuff for that show as well. I know you've got some things coming up this summer and whatnot. So.
Right, all the way through next Christmas, actually.
Yeah. So next time we try to do that, just do like three or four shows. Like you need to do a series, and maybe we'll be able to get you on the show before they're sold out. So it's just you today, but you're gonna, as you mentioned, you got a show coming up and another type of tribute you're kind of doing.
Right.
And as we heard sort of on the intro here, there's a little bit of his music. Tell us about it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, on April 18th at the Cambie Chapel, we'll be doing a tribute to Dave Brubeck and his music, which was Dave Brubeck Quartet.
Okay.
Dave Brubeck and Paul Desmond really were the people that wrote the music for that group, but... And it'll be his 100th birthday. He passed away a few years ago, but he was born in 1920. So in December this year, there'll be a big celebration. And throughout the whole year, he has a foundation that he left before he died. And they're having a big initiative to get people to understand who he was and not to forget who he was and understand. So they're helping promote different events in different places.
Yeah.
So this will be one.
Well, take your opportunity now. Tell us a little bit about Dave Brubeck. Very influential in the history of jazz music.
Yes. He was, like I say, he was born in 1920, and he went was in the Second World War for a period of time and came out of the war and on the GI Bill, went to school for music and studied music and studied classical composing. He grew up in California. His father was a rancher. And he just ended up being attracted to playing the piano.
Yeah.
Was able to get some work and did that. And in the latter 50s, he formed this quartet with four people's bass, drums, himself on piano, and Paul Desmond on alto saxophone. And they produced some pretty interesting music for that time.
Mm.
He was kind of schooled in classical music with... a fairly progressive type of composer at the time, Darius Milhaud.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking into different types of rhythms and different types of harmonies and they got a chance to travel to the Mideast, and they heard a bunch of things that you don't hear around here in terms of rhythmic combinations. So they put some music together, and their first major big hit that everybody would know of would be Take Five. That was a very big song back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out with an album in 1958-59. It was called Time Out.
Mm-hmm.
And the connection with me is that when I was 13 or 14 years old, my sister had joined the Columbia Music Record program, and they send you music. If you don't order music, they'll send it to you anyway and charge you for it.
Yeah.
And they'll try to get rid of some stuff they don't want.
It's a good business model.
So that album was in that package, and she didn't want to hear it, so she gave it to me. And I listened to it, and I'm like, wow, I was blown away by the music and the complicatedness of the songs and the piano parts.
You talked about that in our last interview, how that kind of
triggered me to
with jazz.
To go into the music. So, so it's very interesting music. It's not the usual jazz that you might hear, especially in that period of time, in the latter 40s, early 50s. And even to today, most of the music that you hear that would be considered more modern jazz type music incorporates a lot of what he tried to put into his music. So he was one of the pioneers of that type of music.
Yeah. I always appreciate hearing you, Ray, from your knowledge of the history and stuff. But also, I mean, you're a lifelong musician. You have that artistic side to you. But by trade, you're an audio engineer. You have that kind of scientific side as well, looking at kind of what differentiates jazz from other music. And that kind of appeals to your kind of mathematical and logical side of your brain as well.
Right. And this music in particular is complicated. So that's mm-hmm. I like, solving puzzles. Being an engineer, I like to solve difficult problems. That's like a fun thing for me to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really fascinating to hear, everyone, like we kind of talk about, like love it or hate it, like everyone knows what jazz is. You hear jazz. It's fascinating to hear about a time when that jazz did not exist, and to imagine, having been part of that genesis and that history is pretty cool. So is there anything that you can tell us about that initial clip? Or I know you maybe have a couple other clips to show us, and just tell us a little bit more about kind of what Dave was doing back then.
Sure. Well, I thought I have piano here. I thought I'd just give you some basic music history. Won't be long and boring, just basic reason why what he did was different from what everybody else was doing.
All right, listeners, he promised to not be boring, so.
So, again, jazz music as a whole, started off in Louisiana. It started out as marching band music, so mm-hmm. it was very mm-hmm. 1-2, 1-2. Everybody was marching along with, two beats, and all of the music at that point was in 4-4 time. It was just four beats to a measure, 1-2-3-4.
Yeah.
There were a few jazz waltzes that came out in the 30s and 40s.
That's still pretty standard, right?
Pretty standard. 4-4? Yeah, that's pretty much what you hear when you think of jazz and swing. It's all 4-4 time.
Yeah.
And that's where Dave Brubeck felt as though the music needed to be, go to the next level. I mean, and this is the same period of time where the country was beginning the space program. I mean, all these things were like, hey, let's try this new stuff,
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so he wanted to do some experiments in rhythm. That's really what he did. So he also did things with harmony. He tried to incorporate what they call polyharmonic, polyrhythmic, and also these odd time signatures all together at the same time. So I can give you an example. All the jazz music you would have heard back in the 40s was, in 4-4 time. So it would have just been, that was basically four beats.
Right. 1-2-3-4.
And what he did is he took this other Middle Eastern type of rhythm, this 5-4 rhythm, and he created a song that, you probably heard this beginning of it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually in 5-4 times. That's 1-2-3-4-5. 1-2-3-4-5.
Mm-hmm.
Not easy to dance to.
Right.
But people absorbed it because it was different and it was unique.
Yeah.
And the song we started off with that I can play through more of at this point, it's actually in what is 11-4 time. So it's not just five beats to a measure. There's 11 beats to the measure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to count. You can't tap your foot to it. But
it
definitely has its own type of attraction to you, especially, as a listener, but also, as a musician, it's a challenge to try to improvise over this type of rhythm. But I guess, if I want to play that through a little bit more, you can hear some of the solo that Paul Desmond
did. What is the song called?
This was from the second album. It's called Time in Outer Space.
Okay.
And it's called 11-4.
Okay.
That's the name of the song.
There you go.
So here we go. Well, let's do some of that.
Yeah, I like, because I'm a boring white guy, you know, I just sort of like bob my head to 4-4 rhythm anyway, just because that's all I can do. But I can hear that there's a lot more going on there than the normal rhythm.
Yeah, kind of it bounces around a little bit. And the way it's divided, there's 11 beats in the measure, but there's two 3-4 pieces, a 2-4 piece, and another 3-4 pieces, and it repeats itself over and over. So, like I say, from a musician's point of view, that would be challenging to play, challenging to improvise over. So that's what we try to do, is to make that as interesting as we can.
Cool. So tell us a little bit more about the show that's coming up, or maybe play something else for us. But just as far as like, is it the idea of the show sort of a little bit of what you've been giving us so far, kind of an exploration of his music, or is it more like a kind of just a fun night? Like what's sort of the vision for it?
Yeah, no, it's actually a combination of the two. The goal of this centennial initiative, they call it, is to, like I say, raise people's understanding and awareness of the music. So what we're going to do is we're going to play through, we'll play that composition, we'll play a number of other compositions, and then we'll give some of the
education
of why, when did he write it, what about it is different, parts of it to listen to. So it's somewhat informative as well, because you know, his band was, you know, it's your typical jazz band. You have bass, drums, piano, and a saxophone player, say. Well, then the bass player is usually just playing four beats.
Right.
The drummer is just playing time.
Right.
Piano player is kind of filling in the gaps.
And that, I wonder how they don't get so bored, right? Just like boom, 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 boom. Yeah.
And in his music, each of the players has a separate rhythmic contribution.
Mm.
So as a whole, you'll hear one sound, but if you heard each of them individually, You'd say, wait a minute, something's wrong here. That doesn't sound right. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
But you put it all together and it sounds really
very orchestral in that sense.
Right. Yeah. Everybody contributes their piece to the pie.
Well, I think we have time for maybe one more that you could share with us.
Sure. Well, there was another song that he wrote that was I can play it on the piano. I'll just play the melody of it, but it was written in 1964 when they had the World's Fair, and there was a Unisphere, which was the globe of the world, you know, mm-hmm, being up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this song is called Unisphere. It's in 5/4 time. Again, the common odd time signature that you don't usually see. So
mm-hmm.
I'll just play a little bit of that, and then you can go from there.
Cool. I was wondering how you were going to do the fade, if you're going to lift up your keyboard and start walking away, but you didn't.
Can't do it. Gotta stop.
Slightly unplug the cord. I don't know.
Dead stop.
No, that was great. And it is funny how it kind of keeps you on your toes in that way. Like you sort of get in a rhythm a little bit, like you're expecting the normal kind of thing, and then it sort of zigs when you're expecting a zag. So I like that.
Unexpected bump there.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about this history and some music that we didn't know too much about.
Yeah, and I can let you know where you can buy tickets
to
the event. If you go to pioneerchapel.net,
mm-hmm.
The tickets are on sale now, and it's April 18th. It'll be from 4 to 6 p.m., and it'll be a live show. It'll be a piano, full grand piano. There'll be a bass player, drummer, and an alto saxophoner that plays similar to the way Paul Desmond plays.
Yeah.
Some great local musicians. We have Craig Snizel. Kurt Deutscher is playing drums, and a saxophone player, Laird Holling, will be playing saxophone. So.
Yeah. And I mean, as much as we love our little studio here in Canby, like the chapel is just an amazing venue for musicians, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Sound is perfect.
For piano music.
Little room. Not too big, not too small.
Right,
so perfect.
Well, grab your tickets fast, because these guys have a habit of selling out, apparently, when they play at the chapel. So, Ray, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
I'm
here with Derek Hill at Advantage Mortgage, and you had some advice you were wanting to put out there to prospective home buyers.
Yeah, you know, it's so crazy out there right now. The housing market is just blazing fast, especially in the first-time home buyer range of prices.
Oh, cool.
So it's imperative that you find out all the ins and outs. You know, how much can you afford? What's your payment range that you want to be in? What type of loan program you're qualified for? Because there's a lot of no money down loan programs that are available, but they really might not be best for you. In my experience, those loans have an increased payment that if they had a little bit of money down, they wouldn't need. But the great thing about Canby is it's eligible for the USDA loan program, which is a no money down loan. But my point is, it's just super important to get it figured out before you start looking, because I've seen customers go find the house they love, they call me and they're like, you know, let's go. Right. And then by the time we get everything dialed in, which can be in 4 hours, yeah, that house is gone.
Yeah.
And so it's just way better. So I just want to make sure that consumers know, give us a call. Just give us, you know, let's meet, let's talk about it, let's get everything dialed in so that you know exactly what you're up against, and then you're ready. You can make that offer and kaflooey, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
Yeah, they can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat, and we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
We're joined on the line now by artist Mario De Leon. So if you have driven through downtown Canby recently or by the old library, you might have seen it looking a little different than it has for the past few years. And Mario, it's you and another artist who are doing that. Is that right?
Yes, I have a friend of mine who's helping me. He's a younger artist, so he's helping me fill it in. But yes, I do have a good friend of mine that's helping me.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll talk more about the project and your vision for it. You're a Portland-based artist, is that right?
Portland, Gresham, a little bit of both.
Okay.
You know, I grew up a little bit in Portland, a little bit of Gresham, a little bit in Troutdale, a little bit of everywhere, really, okay, in Portland.
Yeah.
I went to school in New York City. I ended up dropping out and to continue painting, and here we are.
How'd you make it back here?
Just moving around. You know, I moved around a lot in the United States, and I was just trying to sell my artwork in different places, and then, you know, about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, about 4 years ago, I decided to finally move back, you know, because I would always come and visit, you know, because I went to elementary school, middle school, and high school in Portland, and a little bit of, you know, just stuck around, mm-hmm, and then, just decided to move around, and then I decided to come back. I don't know, it's just kind of by accident.
Yeah.
Really by accident to come back.
Cool. Had you ever been to Canby before?
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I think my dad probably brought us out here, but no, not a lot.
Okay.
To be honest with you.
Sure, sure. And it probably looked pretty different back then.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it did, because I do remember coming to church out here with my dad. But,
oh, okay.
But that's, you know, like I said, that's very, maybe around 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing we do have here in Canby is churches.
Oh, yeah.
Mario, I understand, though, that this is not your first Canby project. Is that right? Didn't you do Sunshine Athletics?
I did.
Okay.
I did, yeah. I painted the Super Smash Brothers mural in there, and also the window there.
Yeah, yeah, which I love both of them. Yeah, there's this really cool mural on the inside, as you mentioned. Yeah, it's Bowser and Link, right? From obviously their own games, but also Super Smash Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you got Bowser, like, wearing a gi
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I had to put him in. I do jiu-jitsu as well, so.
Oh, okay.
I had to. Yeah, that's how I met Chris. Yeah, was through training. I lost 100 pounds doing it. So.
Oh, awesome! Hey, you can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
So tell us about the library project. I understand it was through Canby Business, Calvin Lesur with the city, I believe, that kind of mural program. He contracted with you or contacted you to do this. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I was painting Chris's place, you know, I that's how I met Calvin. And, you know, I was barely getting... I'm still, I guess, getting my name out there, right? But, you know, I was barely, you know, touching base and, you know, with my creative side. And he just kept in touch with me on social media and just saw all the work I was doing and then reached out to me from there.
Awesome. That's cool. And I understand it's kind of like, obviously, they wanted some color. They wanted something that would be attractive for, I mean, let's be honest, kind of a boring looking building as we head into this summer of where a lot of great fun events kind of happen right there, either by that park or on that street. We got the farmer's market happening each Saturday and things like that. So that's some of the design. But I also understand a little bit of practicality to it because they want to do some work inside that building, and having, you know, some really cool paintings on the window is a better way to block them off than just putting paper over them or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah. I think they don't want it just to be vacant, you know, to have people just looking at inside of a vacant building if they're not working inside. So, you know, just to add some color to the city community things, you know, nothing too extreme.
Yeah. Well, now that I know that you did both of those murals in Sunshine Athletics, I'm a little disappointed that you didn't go back to the Super Smash Brothers theme for these windows.
that would have been cool. I would have loved to do something like that, but just try to keep, you know, there's a time and place for everything. So, you know, just try to keep it as appropriate as possible, you know, for everybody. I think Super Smash Brothers would have been appropriate for everybody, right? But
I agree.
But at the same time, I think we could have been missing like an age gap there, you know. I'm just trying to make sure everybody liked it.
Yeah. You know what? You may be right there. We may not capture the full, you know, population of Canby with that. So, where did the design come from? How did you develop that? You've got, like, I think there's some Dahlia themes that you're using, some children's faces in the art.
Yeah. Actually, there is no. So with all the projects that I do, I try not to sketch anything out.
Oh, right? Really?
So everything is organic. I come up with it on the spot and I leave it. I sketch some things, but until I get to that point, I still don't know what I'm going to paint.
Yeah.
So like the other windows, there's pictures of dahlias, right? Most likely there will be dahlias on the majority of those windows, but nonetheless, I always leave it open to be able to paint anything.
Yeah.
You know, so usually with all my projects, I'm not a big fan of sketching things out. I love to get up and go and just be like, okay, you need a painting? Well, let's get started.
That's awesome.
It's just trying to sketch things out, you know, hit it different than, you know, a lot of people love getting sketches, or they like to see a sketch beforehand. I don't do them. Mm-hmm. If somebody asks for a sketch, I usually don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, a concept. That's interesting. And that's got to be different from most artists, right? Usually they'll provide some kind of sketch or some kind of rendering, right?
Yeah. But the thing, you know, I usually just provide samples. If you like my work, just give me, you know, a topic that you want. If you want it community-based, I will do it community-based. And that's about it. You know, you never really, it involves a lot of trust with the client.
Sure.
You know, and you have to have the client base that backs you up. You know, that says, yeah, this, he's done that for our business and he's done this for our business, or he did this for our city, you know? So I'm pretty lucky that, I don't show sketches, too many sketches to anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I mean, when you're talking about not doing sketches, though, and not necessarily knowing exactly what the final product is going to be for each one, all I'm hearing is that there's still a chance that Super Smash Brothers might make an appearance. So that's all I'm hearing. That's how it's getting translated to me. So
right. No. Yeah, trust me. Me too. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, hey, there could be something. I'm like, there just might.
You never know. You never know. You literally don't know.
Yeah.
So one thing you probably learned about Cambie, if you didn't know it already, is we love to keep track of, especially downtown, love to keep track of what's going on and you know, little changes and things. If there is a new business coming to town, we're peeking, you know, through the windows and trying to figure out what's happening in there. Have you had some folks come by curious in your work, asking you questions, giving you their thoughts? Has that been fun?
Yeah, I tell them that I'm buying it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And the new owner. I'm kidding, no.
Starting all kinds of rumors, my man. You're just making my job harder for me. You know that.
Yeah. I'm like, no, it's my place, brother. That's all that is. It's a new art studio.
Yeah, we're calling it Mario's.
Yeah, exactly. So, I just tell them, you know, the city just asked me to paint something, you know, on the windows. So it's just something beautiful for the community. I usually tell them, you know, for the 4th of July, because that's my big thing. I know you guys have a lot going on the 4th of July, and I started the project actually early because of that. I was like, well, I'm like, if I want to give the best product and you know, the best things for that time, because I know a lot of things do happen here around that time, I need to get started early.
Yeah.
So it's, so just... I guess just painting, man. More or less just painting it.
Yeah. Cool. Do you have a time frame for how long it'll take you?
It should be, I think we wanted it done before the end of May.
Okay.
And so I'm, like I said, I paint a little bit slower than most. I like to take my time. I like to make sure, even when it comes to, if I'm painting portraits or faces, that it comes out looking at least somewhat like the person, right?
Right.
So I take a little bit of extra time and, yeah, so as long as I have it done before then, that's fine. But yeah, I think it's May or before the 4th of July.
Yeah. I do hope you've been hearing some good feedback. We've seen, as people post pictures and things online, a lot of people saying that they think it looks really nice and really, you know, it's nice to have a bit more color in the downtown core. We had a consultant come and just give us like a lot of feedback and a lot of thoughts on downtown and ways that it could be, you know, redeveloped and improved. And one of her comments that kind of stuck out because it was true and funny was that we just seem to really have a hardcore love of beige in the downtown quarter. Not a ton of color, so.
The color of beige, that's funny.
Yeah, hardcore.
Just to give it, anything, you could add any color to beige and it would almost look good.
Right.
So,
that's a good thing about beige.
That's a really good thing about beige. Yeah, just add any color, almost any color and it would look amazing.
Yeah. Well, Mario, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your work sprucing up our old library. We think it looks really great. Like I said, a lot of folks have been saying how much they appreciate it and that they think it looks good.
I appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Welcome to the Cambie Now Community Board, where you're in charge. That's right, this is where we share your news with our listeners. Everything from birth announcements, birthdays and obituaries, to local events and accomplishments. If your hashtag Cambie Proud, let us celebrate with you. Are you interested in finding out more about climate change? If so, the Clackamas Climate Action Coalition is hosting a presentation by the Climate Reality Project at 6 p.m. Wednesday at the Cambie Public Library. The coalition describes themselves as a committed group of Clackamas County citizens dedicated to moving the country to a sustainable future for all its people. They believe that climate change is the most overriding issue of our lives and that we need to address it head on before it's too late. They work with, support, and collaborate with other organizations, including 350.org, BARC, Extinction Rebellion, Our Climate, Our Children's Trust, OEC, the Sunrise Movement, and others. For more information, contact them at clackamasclimateaction@gmail.com or learn more about the Climate Reality Project at climaterealityproject.org. A Roaring Good Time is on tap at Gwen's Coffee House this Saturday. That's the tagline for a new Great Gatsby-themed event that aims to recreate the spirit of the Roaring Twenties right here in Canby. Food, drinks, local vendors, raffle prizes, live music by the One-Eyed Cats, and an optional costume contest from 7 to 9:30. Be advised, this speakeasy is only for those who are 21 and older. Admission is $15 plus a donation of one non-perishable food item. All proceeds benefit the Canby Center Food Bank. It's your last chance to get tickets for the Canby Rotary's Daddy-Daughter Dance, happening this Saturday at the Ackerman Center. The evening will include a chocolate fountain, cupcakes, and other special treats, magical surprises, and other wonderful moments for a dad and his daughter or daughters to share. Frankie's daughter is making him go to this because, of course she is. So, if you are a dad with a special little girl in your life and you want to support the good work of the Canby Rotary, join Frankie for this magical evening. The dance will be from 6 to 9 p.m. Saturday, March 14 at the Ackerman Center. Tickets can be purchased on Facebook and Eventbrite. For links, find this story on our website at canbynowpod.com. Clackamas County Safe Routes to School is pleased to announce their second annual poster art contest. Students are invited to submit their original artwork about the benefits of walking, biking, rolling, and using other ways to get to school. Artwork should show how these modes can be fun, healthy, and good for the environment. Students can enter to win prizes and have their artwork featured on posters, brochures, and more, and displayed in an exhibit sponsored by the Clackamas County Arts Alliance. Artwork will be judged based on original concept, visual design and composition, communication of the theme, and storytelling. K through 8 children in Clackamas County are invited to participate. Prizes include a $100 gift card for first place, $50 gift card for second place, and $25 gift card for third place in all three age groups. Students should mail or deliver their hand-drawn art to the Clackamas County Development Services Building, 3rd Floor Engineering Division, 150 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City. Submissions due by April 30. Visit clackamas.us/engineering/srts.html to learn more. The 24th Annual Canby Community Preschool Fundraising Auction is scheduled for April 18th at Willamette Valley Country Club. The theme, Uptown Hoedown. Catchy. This annual auction is attended by over 200 guests and is a fun and interactive evening, complete with an MC, an auctioneer, silent and live auctions, and a dessert dash. In past years, the annual auction has provided approximately 40% of Canby Community Preschool's budget. It not only directly supports the preschool's operating budget, but also non-budgetary improvements and special needs such as scholarships. CCP is a nonprofit self-supporting preschool, and their highly involved parents and staff appreciate the support of the community that this event provides each year. Dinner tickets are available for purchase at canbycommunitypreschool.com/auction. To get your event, announcement, or community news on the Canby Now Community Board, email us today at info@canbynowpod.com.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, Do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. The Camby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Camby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Camby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.